This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry in Mariana. And I learnt one thing from Barry tonight, folks, is that the entries for the 2026 Congress in Palmy, people have already started entering. Oh, I was waiting for some sort of notice that I'm going to get a discount on my entry fee, but you don't get that now, do you?
To be fair, neither of us have entered, but I'm sure we will.
I wonder if the same thing's going to happen this year, like it did last year. If you paid your entry, full entry fee before a certain date, you went into a draw to get it reimbursed.
I didn't win that.
No, nor did I.
Yeah,
I think from memory, George Masters was one of them that won it, and another person was Liz Burrows. Talking about Burrows, I hear they had another win.
Jack James is, seriously, is he the Rory McIlroy of Bridge, or is he the Yannick Sinner, or is he the James McDonald?
We should find a green jacket and give it to Jack.
Playing with Wayne Burrows and playing with Scott Smith and Andre Sharko, who hardly ever plays these days. He came out and played, and they beat a strong field at the Hastings 5A teams, and
wow,
then followed off to Paraparam 5A pairs, played with Wayne Burrows again and won again. So I think it's about 6 or 7 weekends in a row he's won something now. Is it ever going to end?
I think he should just keep playing, Barry, because at the moment, luck's on his side.
I tell you what, Blair Fisher's just getting a little worried.
Why?
Well, he's leading the Baden Wilson, but Jack's only about 7A points behind.
Ooh.
But he has got a cunning plan.
What's that? Is he going to play
he's
with
playing
Jack?
With him. He's playing with Jack this weekend. Jack.
Where are they playing?
I think it's Mount Maunganui.
Oh, okay.
So Jack's
actually,
going
that does
to
seem right. Jack's coming to Hamilton on Sunday.
He's making the trek up from Palmy to Hamilton, and then he's heading over in the morning to play at the Mount, coming back again and playing on Sunday in the Hamilton Restricted.
Yeah. Come on, you Waikato Whites.
And then back down to Palmy. Whoever said that the price of gas was expensive? Clearly not. Maybe they give it away in Palmy North.
Or there could be another reason he could be using his dad's credit card, so he's not paying it. You're welcome to Hamilton, Jack.
There were some other events on the weekend as well. The North Shore 5A pairs. Who do you think won that?
Blair Fisher and Mike Curry.
No, it's a pair that you know very well. Very well.
Okay.
They appear on the show pretty regularly.
Was it Judge Julianne the Bailiff?
It was.
Oh, well done.
Marlborough had their mini Congress. They had the open teams. Jane Lennon's team won the 5A teams. Jane Lennon, Max Morrison, David Taylor, and Jesse Pellinato. The Marlborough 5A pairs was won by Leon Mayer and Charles Kerr from John Patterson and Kate Davies. They did have Leon Mayer and Charles Kerr in their team, Kate and John, so they came in second in the teams.
E whai aki nei. Coming up next, it's time for the Gin Club. That's juniors, intermediates and novice. And our man on the spot, Mr. Gin himself, it's Ross Longney.
Hey, Mr. Gin, I can see the shape you're in. Finger on your eyebrow.
Good morning, Ross. How's your week been?
Good morning, Mariana. Hi, Barry. I had a nice week, thanks. Played a little bit of bridge. Well, quite a lot of bridge, really. Been fun.
Well, I was looking at your results on the weekend, Ross. Couldn't help but think he must have had a dose of pickle juice at lunchtime, I reckon.
We seem to have had a better afternoon session, which is so rare for me. So
really?
Rare. Yeah.
You're telling me it's usually the other way around.
Yeah, well, you're telling me I need pickle juice because I usually crash in the afternoon, so.
Apparently it tastes really foul, but the results were great. Couldn't help but notice he had a 48 in the morning and a 62 in the afternoon.
That's pretty awesome. So you're saying you normally crash in the afternoon. So you might have been thinking, when you got a 48, were you thinking, what's the afternoon going to look like?
Yeah, you were thinking it was going to be 38.
Yes, 38 was on the cards. 58 would have been lovely. Quite often in the last 4 or 5 boards, I lose concentration and do just some stupid thing, you know. All of us gin members suffer that problem sometimes. You just lose it a little bit in the end. Most sports are the same, I guess.
Yeah, that's something that Judge Jory's brought up. You wouldn't
think it was possible, would you, to score in the 40s in one session? You play with the same partner, the same player, the next session in the same room and score in the 60s. You'd think, how could that happen? That's just impossible. It happens more than you'd think.
Just look at those Warriors, eh?
Yeah, well, yeah,
oh, I know.
Right. Okay, Ross, what's been happening in the gin world?
Okay, well, actually, there's a really busy weekend for junior intermediate tournaments, and it was really good to see some good results coming in. We can start way down in Otago. They had their 90th anniversary intermediate tournament, and that was won by Pam and Stuart Strang from Gore. And they won both sessions. That's a pretty good feat to top both sessions, morning and afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah, we came up to the North Island. Upper Hutt ran in a separate junior and a separate intermediate. They had a good lot of tables in the end. In the junior, the first was Julie Keenan and Andrew Broadway from Kairanga, ahead of Nicola Meldrum from Wanaka and Kath Jones from Kairanga. I remember meeting Kath Jones just a week or so ago on the Good Friday online tournament. Now, the intermediate one was won by Carol Cornelius and Paul Baines. Carol's from Wellington and Paul Baines from South Wairarapa. They play online quite a lot with us.
I was going to say, how did you run into these people? So you met them online?
Yeah, they played last night online at Levin, and also they play occasionally at East Coast Bays online, Real Bridge. We have a lot of laughs with them, and it was good to see them do so well, ahead of Jenny Wiggins and Susie Patterson from the home club, Upper Hutt. Palmerston North also ran two separate tournaments. In the intermediate, the first was Chris Smith and Andrew Kirkpatrick from Fielding. Just looked them up to get their home club, but they look like a couple of old hands that have been around a number of years. It was great to see them have a win. I'm sure that was a really popular win down in Palmerston North, ahead of Rohan Weewaya and Alan Mudford. And both those pairs were first and second in morning and afternoon. Junior tournament was won by a couple from Dannevirke, Mary Crane and Barbara Christian, ahead of a couple of locals, Robbie Green and Susan Harris. Just on my way up north, I happened to drop into the Matamata Swiss pairs, and I saw that our mates, man that you call a wimp, Barry, Bill Leach, and Kerry McRae, picked up a fourth there. Now, that was on a day that there was an intermediate tournament on in Howick. So Bill had obviously heard you on the radio and thought, oh, we better enter this A tournament down in Matamata instead of going into the 5B tournament in Howick.
Did notice that. Bill's never actually said anything to me about this, but I did notice he was playing there. And I had a look and I think, oh, it seems like he's just going all out now. I think he's given up on the intermediate thing and he's just going to blast into open and go for it. Hopefully the fourth at Matamata is going to encourage him.
Well, yeah. That would have given him 4 8-points, I think. Not a bad effort. He missed the Howick Intermediate Junior Tournament. That was won by locals, Karina and Mark Sim-Smith. A very popular win that was. Karina was actually the tournament organiser, so she had to give herself a prize. And her big prize, of course, was a kiss from her husband, Mark. That was ahead of Thomas Freeman Green and Christina Hyde, who had a good week. If you recall, they got third in that Open Monday tournament in Remuera.
Interesting, Ross, when you see Bill playing in an open tournament coming fourth and then struggling to feature in an intermediate, sometimes maybe the gap's not as big as people think.
That's all observer on there. Eminem teammate, that's what we say, you know.
It's all respect or fear, none, I know.
Yeah, okay. None. Bill's taken up the challenge and he's giving it a good go. Bill and Kerry are a really well-established intermediate partnership and have played together for 3 or 4 years and very, very steady and very, very good. And we travel down to tournaments, the four of us together in the car. We have a lot of laughs and nice to see them doing well. At Howick, the top junior pair were a local pair, Leah Humphreys and Jane Tomlinson. That was an interesting tournament because this is what we're talking about and trying to encourage clubs to run their own tournament, because there were 20 tables, 10 pairs from Howick Club alone. So they put their entries in early and they got in early and they played and they made it a remarkably good fun tournament. A little flashback to Thursday restricted pairs online that Remuera won. The top intermediate pair was Deirdre Oliver and her partner from Deirdre from East Coast Bays. And talking about online, a little shout out. Cavity has their online Thursday tournament once a month. The standard is not horrendously high, and it's a great opportunity for intermediate and junior pairs to play online with really good players in a nice, relaxed environment. And it's Cappity once a month on Thursday. So next week, we've got quite a busy weekend as well. We've got the Hibiscus Tournament, intermediate junior. That's full, like Mount Maunganui multi-grade. And on Sunday, we've got the Hamilton Restricted. South Wairarapa, Greytown, have their intermediate and junior tournament also. And Whanganui has an intermediate and junior. And both of those, intermediate and junior, are booked out. So there's like four tournaments, five if you like, if you take Hibiscus, that are fully booked a week out from the tournament. New Zealand Bridge should be pleased with that.
At Hamilton, we've got 16 tables so far. We're still interested in more entries. We can accommodate as many entries as everyone can give us.
Okay, so what do we need to tell our gym club members? Go up to one of your best, the open player you can find in your club this week and say, would you like to play with me in the Hamilton Restricted Tournament on Sunday? And just like Barry, I'm sure they'll say, yep, sure, of course we will.
You can bring down a busload from Warkworth if you like. We still won't be booked out, Ross.
We'll do it. I'm there. I'm in.
Listeners, Ross has been sending me pictures of the bridge clubs that he's been playing at, and we're almost ready to send off a little montage of that. I'm going to put that together this week, Ross.
Okay, that sounds good. I've got a little story related to that little collection of clubs. I think I need to do the whole country. It would be fantastic. Go on safari and spread the Bridge Zone message to every club in New Zealand. What do you reckon?
Yep.
Remember we talked about the Masterton Open a few weeks ago, and the top intermediate pair there was Trevor Gain and Vela Breitling. They were fourth overall. Now, Trevor's daughter, Rebecca, lives in Auckland now, and she was telling me at the tournament, she said, I've got a bit of interesting news for you. My grandparents, not on her father's side, but her mother's side, were very involved in New Zealand Bridge back in the 70s and early 80s, and they achieved for the first time by anybody, the record, they visited every bridge club in New Zealand and played at every bridge club.
What?
Back in the day, when Pyro was a bridge club, there would have been more bridge clubs in New Zealand than there are now. And Rebecca's grandmother and grandfather visited every club and played at every club in New Zealand. And she has a scrapbook of theirs, which she's going to bring to the next tournament and show me.
So, I'm curious, Ross, who were they?
I don't know their names, but I will report back to you when I have a look at the scrapbook, because people will obviously remember them. It's not that long ago. Yeah.
How many clubs do we have?
It's like 120-something, isn't it?
I could come with you and promote Youth Bridge.
Youth Bridge.
What are you going to do, Barry? Are you going to come with us? What will you be promoting?
Open homes.
Open homes. I'll be down in Masterton. If you need me to do an open home for you, let me know.
Barry could promote Seniors Bridge.
I'm not old enough yet, Ross.
But you look old enough, Barry.
So people keep telling me.
Okay, hey, that's excellent. We're going to be looking forward to that scrapbook.
I'll leave Ross, have you got a picture of Hamilton Bridge Club in your montage, or are you going to take one on Sunday?
I think I took one last time I was down there. But if I haven't, I will do it again.
Gary, you should come in so all three of us could get a photo at Hamilton.
Okay. Celebrate with Ross. Maybe it'll be with a pickle juice if he's got any left over.
Catch up with us next week. The Gin Man leads you out with the Gin Club motto.
Observa omne, neminem time. Respect all, fear none. Have a good week. Light it and
send it out. And next up, it's Barry's tip. You got to know when to hold up, know when
to fold up, know when to walk away. I've got to confess, today's tip actually came from the gin man, Ross Longney. He was asking me about this. So your partner opens a heart, you've got 6 to 9 points, and for those of us that are playing five-card majors, which I guess there's quite a few, the question is, You've only got three hearts and you've got four spades or even five and 6 to 9 points. What do you bid? Do you bid one spade or do you bid two hearts? Same thing applies if you've got four hearts and maybe five spades and partner opens a heart playing echo. What do? Do you bid your spades or do you support the hearts? I reckon you should always support the hearts. You've got a fit in the major. Why would you go looking for a fit in the other major? How many fits in the majors do we need? With a stronger hand, obviously you could bid the spades, intending to maybe jump in hearts later. Although if you've got four card supports, I'm not even going to bid the spades, even if I've got six of them. I'm just going to support the hearts. I'm going to bid one heart with 6 to 9. I'm going to bid three hearts with 10 to 12. I'm going to game force if I've got enough to game force. If I've got a fit in a major, that's the most important thing you can do in bridges. Tell partner you've got a fit for their major. There's nothing they like hearing better.
I think the backbone of any partnership is majors, no trumps, minors.
If you're playing five-card majors, if partner bids a heart and you decide you better bid these spades because you've got four or five of them, and then partner goes back to two clubs or two diamonds and you put them back to two hearts, that really is saying you haven't really got a fit for hearts because you didn't support them in the first place. So you're probably just saying you've got a couple of hearts. You're not really keen on them, but it's better than diamonds. If you don't support it straight away, partner's probably never going to believe that you've actually got support. Like if you've got four hearts and partner opens a heart and you're playing echo, and you bid a spade and they bid two diamonds and you go back to two hearts, they're thinking you've only got two of them and you've actually got four. It's really important that as soon as you know you've got a fit in the major, that you tell partner.
Ke te whare kote, te mea e whai ake nei. At the courthouse is next.
Hear ye, the court's in session now, here come the judge.
And this week, the judge returns. Nice to see you, Julie.
Thank you very much, it's good to be here.
Well done to Judge Julie and the bailiff on winning the North Shore 5A on the weekend.
Yes, clap, clap.
Oh, thank you very much. We were getting a bit depressed because every time we played, we seemed to get about 51%. So we're cheered up a wee bit at the moment.
Nice.
And well done to everybody else that played. It was a well-run tournament. It's always enjoyable playing at North Shore.
Okay, we've got a couple of things to ask you. And just to make it easy, I'm going to give you the easy one first. This is when you open two hearts, and some people might play it as weak, some people play it as strong, maybe some people play it as intermediate. Does this ever need to be alerted if this is a natural six-card suit?
Regulations around alerts are about the information contained within the bid. So if the bid is natural, not alertable, unless it's something unexpected about it or it's got additional information. So if you open two hearts, that shows hearts and another. The point is that and another is the additional information that makes it alertable. Because it's more about the shape of your hand, you might only have five hearts. I would alert playing five card weak twos. I'm not convinced that it's entirely clear that that is what you do. Absolutely, the range is not relevant. However, having said that, I think if you're opening with 0 points a week two, I think that would be alertable as being outside the expectation of your opponents. If you are in doubt, in general, alerting is better than not alerting, because the idea is to let your opponents know that you're playing something that they might need to know because it is out of the ordinary or it's got that extra information. If you've got a six-card heart suit and you open two hearts, if you are 6 to 29 points or 37 points, whatever it might be, by agreement, not alertable.
Oof. One of my pet hates is when they open something and you ask two hearts and you ask what it is and they say less than an opening hand. That drives me insane.
Yeah.
When you ask them if it could be naught, they say, oh, no, it wouldn't be naught. Do I have to go through the whole thing and ask if it could be one or if it could be two or if it could be three?
Pulling teeth, right? It's like Michael's. People say it's Michael's. Michael's not only has a huge variation about which suits you are showing, it also has a huge range of what values you are showing. And recently, it appears that people that think that if it's 5-4 or 4-4, it qualifies as describing as Michael's, which is 5-5. So when someone says, what do you understand by the bid? You are meant to get a full explanation. And that means the range of the bid, as well as the fact that it is showing 5-5, 5-4, 4-4, who knows?
I was just going to say, some of them are playing it as 4-4, I know that.
Yeah, right. And that's misleading. It's
yes.
as misleading as giving it a different point count.
Hey, maybe if they're feeling frisky, they'd do it with a 4-3. I'm not trying to give anybody ideas.
Look, thank you, Barry. We'll wait to see that come up with the next couple of tournaments we play, shall
yes.
we?
He's too much of an angel, Julie. Can't you see that halo above
it's
his head?
It's like people that play five-card preempts, playing six with appropriate shape or sevens, and in some degree it's who you're playing against as well. There is a line where you are making a bid that is not in the expectation of your opponents. And if your partner has done this four or five times in the recent past, it becomes alertable because you know that this is likely to be something that happens and your opponents are entitled to know that your partner regularly bids on these different types of hands. So that's the week twos.
Okay, so my partner and I play two over one, where if it goes one heart, two diamonds, it's natural, promises an opening hand and is forcing to game. Now, it's natural. Is that alertable? From what I can understand, we might have run into a bit of a disagreement here between some directors. What's the story there?
So depending on who you ask, it may or may not be illusible. Patrick and I do not agree on this. If it is natural enforcing, I am happy that it's not illusible. I mean, we are talking in ACOL about being 10 plus or a very good 9 plus points after partner opens at the one level and you bid at the two. And even standard American, the same sort of thing. Providing that the bid is showing value and is forcing, I actually don't have a problem. If a bid is not forcing, it is 100% illusible no matter who you ask, unless you're a past hand. So if Barry's a past hand and I open one heart and he bids two clubs, I don't have to alert it. He's a past hand, it can't be forcing. But if I'm playing any system that I generally play, if it's forcing, I wouldn't be alerting it unless it's outside expectation and value.
Yeah, I guess if they're playing anything, if one of them opens one spade and the next hand responds two diamonds, if you want to come into the auction at this point, I guess you won't be that amazed if bad things happen to you.
Well, exactly, right? And that really is the point, that sort of thing. There are a range of things, and there are too many different situations, as you tell from the questions I'm getting at the moment, about what may or may not be alertable for New Zealand Bridge to cover every single different type of bid that may or may not be alertable. In general, if you alert something, you won't be in trouble, because it's less likely to carry unauthorised information. That doesn't mean you alert every bid your partner makes. That is not what I'm trying to say here. But if you are in doubt, then alerting is probably better than not alerting. If you really don't know and you're playing in an event, ask your director. They're the people that are going to come to the table and make a ruling. Send a letter in the bridge zone. Maybe we can poll some people at some point about alerts. We can't be definitive about it because there are too many variations on exactly what may or may not be in a manual. It would take forever.
I'm wondering whether the bailiff's considered alerting every bid that Julie ever makes.
It has happened.
He may have good cause.
We play relay.
Yeah, that's right.
We're talking about your ACOL players where it goes a 2-over-1 response and a 2-no-trump rebid. I mean, clearly they're in a game force now. If you're an ACOL player, you'll know that. Should that be alerted, whether it could be 12 to 14 or whether it can be 15 to 19, maybe?
I'm amused about the fact New Zealand predominantly treats ACOL, and you're asking if the ACOL bids should be alerted as opposed to the standard American ones, which are not forcing. If the rebid is part of your system and it is a balanced hand, whether you play standard American, so the rebid is like 12 to 14, or ACOL where it is 15 plus, it is not alertable. We announce our opening one no-trump bids. Our no-trump rebids, our no-trump overcalls are not announced. If the opponents ask and you give an explanation.
I don't know whether I should tell you this, but I was playing against somebody the other day. Somebody rebid two no-trumps and their partner announced the range. And they said, oh, no, that's only at our club that we announce the range, partner. And I thought,
That's interesting. So, yes, okay. That's the other thing about alert. We have lots of different things that you play about the level of play and what the rules are. And if you belong to a club and you are playing, one of the things is that when people go to other places or play in tournaments, they should be to some degree prepared for what is the norm. Now, we can get variations, but we can't get variations that are in conflict with the laws of bridge or with New Zealand bridge regulations.
Yeah.
There are some things there about what clubs may or may not be able to do that they need to be cautious about some of the time. Years and years ago, we used to mark the bidding pad with a vulnerability in the dealer. So you put a circle around the dealer and a line across for whoever was vulnerable or on the bidding pad. When they became in common use, we had parts of the country that used the centre of the pad for advertising. So they didn't want people putting stuff through the middle of it. And also we had other things about reminding what the vulnerability was, and you're meant to look at the board. One club had a penalty if you marked a bidding pad. And at that time in New Zealand Bridge, I think we were marking them at Congress. So we had a variation across the country about what happened and what didn't happen, which caught people out when they went to different clubs and they played tournaments in different places. Anyway, so at some point, the regulation became that you do not mark the bidding pad, very clearly by New Zealand Bridge. The same for when we go overseas. We have to be aware about what the alert procedure is internationally as opposed to our country. New Zealand and Australia are very similar in their alert regulations, which helps tremendously with going to and fro between each country with playing tournaments. Okay, so all have a very, very good week. Good luck in all the tournaments and bridge that you play.
Awesome.
Thank you, Julie.
See ya.
Bye.
Alrighty, well that's about it for this week. For anyone else having bridge this week, good luck and we'll see you at the tables.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international, nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.